which has fascinating shock implications. So let's try to go into that a little bit today. This is a topic we talked about for a very long time. We'll try to keep it relatively contained, probably within today's discussion. We had looked a little bit at the Mishnah, and the Mishnah, after delineating what seems to be the earliest time for Kriyat Shema, and then arguing about when the latest time for Kriyat Shema, the topic came up of, is there possibly a situation here where there is an agreement, let's leave out the first opinion, which doesn't seem to make it into a halacha at all, but among the last two opinions, maybe there really is a theoretical agreement as to when Kriyat Shema ends, that Kriyat Shema really can be recited all night, and that the debate between them is only about whether or not there is a rabbinical enactment that limits it. Perhaps the position of Chachamim, it's not even much of a perhaps at this point, seems to be pretty much agreed as far as the way it's presented in the Mishnah and the Gemara, that really Chachamim, when they maintain that Kriyat Shema goes up until Chatzos, that's actually a Gezerah. That's not an interpretation of the Din Min HaTorah. They agree the Din Min HaTorah is really consistent with Rabbi Gamliel's view that it's an all-night mitzvah, and that when they maintain that Chatzos is a cutoff, that was a rabbinical enactment, which the Gemara will get into in some more detail, in order to keep somebody from the Avera itself being somewhat surprising language, because we're not really dealing with a losa, say here, we're not dealing with a transgression, we're dealing with omitting a mitzvah. So the language of l'harchik min aveira itself, a little bit surprising. On top of that, the whole idea of a gzera on a mitzvah saseh is somewhat unusual, a topic we talked about a little bit last time. So we talked about the fact that that itself is unusual, and that there are a number of points that the Mishnah leaves open to disagreement among the Rishonim. We talked a little bit about the question of whether or not the Gzeira itself exists. Lahalacha, do the Rishonim agree that there is such a Gzeira? We talked about how there seems to be an inverse relationship among some Rishonim in terms of Pesach night. Pesach night, we have three options of understanding how the mitzvah of Afikomen plays out, Lahalacha. Either that it goes all night, or it goes till Chatzos, or somewhere in the middle that it goes all night theoretically, but there is a Gzeira of Chatzos. And the Rishonim who believe that there is such a Gzeira seem to be inversely proportionate, the opposite, the reverse, of those who believe there is a Gzeira when it comes to Kriyat Shema, a point, as we mentioned, the Beis Halevi talks about. We also got into the question of the Mishnah brings up the topic of Hekter Chalavim Ve'Evarim, that when Gamliel mentioning that is something comparable to this situation, that really he says that mitzvah is also all night, which sounds like he's saying it's all night, but Chazal made a Gzeira that goes up to Chatzos, just like Shema, and as he's saying that even though that's true, it's the really all night, it's just a Gzeira that comes until Chatzos. But we saw that Rashi says there is no Gzeira by Hekter Chalavim Ve'Evarim. Well, the Rambam thought there was, Rashi denies it. We talked a little bit about what that could mean in terms of why they would be arguing about that. But in terms of our mitzvah Kriyat Shema, what we had started, the really fascinating point, which is the one that has some broader Shas implications that we'll try to discuss this morning, is, so in terms of Kriyat Shema itself, so what are the range of possibilities? So on the one hand, we saw a debate whether or not there is a Gezerah, which is unresolved. It sounds like from the Rush and the Shulchan Aruch, like Lahalacha, there is no Gezerah, that one can L'chatila say Kriyat Shema after Chatzos, L'chatila can say Kriyat Shema all night. And the view of the Rambam is that there is a Gezerah L'chatila, L'chatila, we should say Kriyat Shema before Chatzos. Now in practice, it's not going to make that much of a difference, because in practice we would always advocate, recommend saying Kriyat Shema before Chatzos, in deference to the view of the Rishonim that there is such a Gzeirah L'chachila. But if one is asking in a Shaila only after Chatzos, so then we would still tell you to say it, because why not? Worse, it's Psukim, and maybe it's still, still the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. Okay, you didn't fulfill the Gezerah, but that's for following already. It's ready after Chatzos.
What about tomorrow?
So what about tomorrow? So tomorrow again, anytime you're asking the question beforehand, we would always advocate you saying it before Chatzos. So if you're asking the question then, we'll say it earlier. If you're asking the question afterwards, we'll say, why not? Say it 2 o'clock in the morning, why not say it? What do you have to lose? And are you fulfilling the mitzvah? So we would have assumed, yes, even though it's still not going to affect your decision, because it's a question for Shemayim, it's still not a question practically, it doesn't have much implication practically. But we would have assumed that for sure you are Yotze. And what we started to discuss last time is the surprising position of Rabbeinu Yonah. That Rabbeinu Yonah maintained that no, you are not in fulfillment according to Chachamim, you're not in fulfillment after Chatzos. That was his shocking view of Chachamim's position. That they redefined the mitzvah, and they said, even though the Torah tells us to say Shema all night, Chazal came in and said, not true anymore, only up until Chatzos. This is a dividing line. Now, it's a shocking statement, which we'll discuss this morning, and it provoked a lot of the strong reaction in the latest farm. Although, as we mentioned, I think, in the last minute of last week, that it's, even according to Rabbeinu Yonah, it's not so significant, because Rabbeinu Yonah himself says he holds like Rabbi Gamliel. He thinks the halacha is that it's all night anyway. He's just explaining what the view of Chachamim is, what's the difference. And his latest farim point out, and the earliest farim point out also, the Minchas Elazar has a tshuva where he also talks about this. Seems to be this is the dialogue in the Mishnah, that the children of Rabbi Gamliel came to him and said, we know, Daddy, we know about your position that you hold that Shema is all night, but maybe the majority has overruled you, no offense. Maybe what about the view of Chachamim, that they say it's only till Chatzos. So here we are, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, we're coming back to the party. Maybe we shouldn't bother. Maybe that's what the majority position is, that the mitzvah is over. And then Rabbi Gamliel says, no, it's not true, you should say it now. And when Chachamim said Chatzos, they only meant it as the Gzeira. So many understand that that's the dialogue that the kids were saying to him. Maybe the mitzvah is no longer effective, maybe there's no point in us saying it. And he's saying, no, that's not true, there continues to be a point in your saying Shema. So that's a whole discussion, what exactly Rabbeinu Yonah is getting at. Again, a very, even according to him, a theoretical point. So let's talk about that idea.
In other words, is it possible if Yonah is saying, L'chatchila, you should go by what they say. Did you ever, when you're coming home from a party at 2 o'clock, and you haven't said Kriyat Shema? It's fine, it goes the whole night. In other words, you set your sights on Chatzot.
But I think that's what everyone, that's what we agreed with generally. But he's saying a bigger chiddush, he's saying that according to Chachamim, who he's not, he doesn't adopt the halacha, this is according to what Chachamim are putting forward, it's not just the chachila, but the mitzvah is over at Chatzos. 2 o'clock in the morning, you're not going to accomplish anything in terms of the mitzvah of Shema by saying Shema now. Talmud Torah, yeah, but you might as well learn something else. It's all, it's just Talmud Torah. Which is a striking view. So what exactly is that based on? So we know there is a concept, the Gemara says in Sefer Yavamis, that there is a notion, Yesh Koach Bidei Chachamim, La'kor Davar Min HaTorah, B'Shev Al Tasa, that the rabbis have the authority to uproot a mitzvah Min HaTorah, provided they do it passively. This is also a shocking statement. We assume that, okay, the rabbis add on legislation to the Torah, they build a fence around the Torah, they tell us to do more, or to abstain from more things, depending on what direction we're talking about. But the idea that they take away mitzvos, and tell us to do fewer mitzvos, is a surprising one. But the Gemara says, nonetheless, that that's true. And the most famous example, even though it's not the example the Gemara is talking about, and there's some debate whether that's a perfect example, but the most famous example is shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it falls out on Shabbos, the lulav on Sukkot the first day when it falls out on Shabbos. Then there's a mitzvah in HaTorah to blow shofar to take a lulav. And the rabbi said, you know what, don't do it, because we're worried about what seems like a very far-fetched concern, that maybe there'll be an act of carrying that'll happen on Shabbos because of these mitzvos. Gzeir Hashem Yavirena Dalet Amos Rosh Hashanah, I'm worried that maybe a shiloh will come up in terms of the shofar or the lulav, and you're going to be so focused on the mitzvah you'll run out into the street without thinking about it to go ask a chacham, and you'll end up carrying. So the rabbis didn't want there to be some of these object-based mitzvos on Shabbos, whole discussion when they said it, when they didn't say it. But that's the basic idea, that when you have a mitzvah that involves an object that could be questionable how to perform it, they don't want you doing that on Shabbos, they made a gezeira not to fulfill the mitzvah. So here you're being told to abandon a mitzvah in HaTorah. Apparently they have that authority. And the Gemara says it's only true in terms of a shevel tasa, meaning in terms of a passive action, where it would be the result that you would omit a mitzvah, basically. But they wouldn't tell you to violate actively Torah law. So you're not going to find a case where the rabbis are going to say, in order to protect Torah law, we'll tell you eat treif. We'll tell you do mechal Shabbos. So they're not going to do that. They're not going to tell you to actively violate the Torah. They'll tell you to leave out a mitzvah and not fulfill it. So fine, so that we have precedent for. But Rabbeinu Yonah's application is very surprising for a number of reasons. Here, we're not protecting Shabbos. We're not trying to avoid Chil Shabbos. We are protecting a positive mitzvah. And it's not a clash between two mitzvahs. It's the same mitzvah. In order to protect the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, we'll tell you that you can't fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema already. That's a completely unusual application. I think it's a unique application that you don't really have a mucker for. And we mentioned last week that there's room to question what are you even trying to accomplish? Are we trying to protect tomorrow night? That will say that, okay, if you realize you blew it tonight, so then in future nights you're not going to let it get that late. Because how does this mitzvah gain by being taken off the table? And so it would seem maybe like tonight's mitzvah, you're going to have to sacrifice. Like when a teacher doesn't let you in the classroom late, they're saying, okay, you'll miss today's class, but every future day you'll come on time because you'll realize you have to not miss. Or is it about tonight's mitzvah, that if you know in advance, the option's not going to be there for you, right, which maybe is more comparable, let's say, to shaving before Yontif. So the idea that Chazal prohibited shaving, if you assume it's how you understand it, Chazal presumed haircuts, shaving on Chol HaMoed, because we don't want you to leave it to Chol HaMoed. No, you're not going to have that opportunity, so we'll push you to do it before Yontif. So we find that type of idea, that you're deprived of a later opportunity, so you shouldn't rely on it. So that's the model here. So that's a little question as to what it is. But in any event, it's a very surprising idea to say, okay, in order to make sure that Shema will be said on time, then we'll restrict its zone in which you can perform it. And we mentioned also that the second option is a little bit less likely, because then we're not even protecting the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, we're protecting the gezeira of Kriya Shema. Because what do we lose? If somebody leaves it till 2 o'clock in the morning, so, well, let them do it at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's only because we think there's a motivation to get into do it by Chatzos, which is itself a gezeira that we're pushing to do it. That's many surprises here. So Rabbeinu Yonah's position was disputed by Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, and before that by the Shagas Aryeh. Shagas Aryeh, who we spent some time discussing in the context of our Tosfos before. So Shagas Aryeh, as we mentioned, has no fear of Rishonim, certainly not a minority view on Rishonim, so he's not worried to argue on this. Some suggest that the Shagas Aryeh is l'shitaso here, he's being consistent with his opinion, that he has a commentary on some of the Masechtos called the Turi Evan. And in the Turi Evan, he discusses, what are the parameters? When did Chazal tell us that they have the authority to uproot mitzvot? So obviously this is not something they did lightly. So when did they uproot mitzvot? So the position of the author of the Shagas Aryeh in the Sefer Turi Evan is that only when there was a potential violation of the Nisan. If we're risking a Chil Shabbos, something like that, so then maybe they did it. But in order to avoid skipping a mitzvah, so this was not a step they took. Which itself is a discussion of what exactly are the parameters. One example in the Rishonim, which is not about the Averis or Losa says at all, is there is a whole discussion, the Gemara in the beginning, Ksubis, Gimel Amud Beis, Dalet Amud Aleph, the whole discussion there about a very sad scenario where a couple's about to get married, and right before the wedding, so the parents of one of the bride or the groom passes away, and the Gemara has a whole discussion about how do you balance the need for a funeral versus the need for the wedding, and the need for Shevet Brachos versus the need for Avelos. And the Gemara basically says, without going into all the details, that the Shevet Brachos comes before the Avelos. 7 days of Shevet Brachos, and then only after that you have the Avelos. So most of the Rishonim understand that they're both institutions, Midrabanan, Avelos and Shema Brachos are both rabbinical mitzvos. Okay, so the rabbis decided this is how it should be done. Hey Mamru, the Hey Mamru. But there is a minority view in Rishonim that the first day of Avelus is an obligation in Torah. So what right do the rabbis have to say, hold off on the first day of Avelus until after Shema Brachos is over? So some of the Rishonim say, the Rashba and the Ran, they say that this is an example of Yesh Koach Lakadavim in HaTorah V'Shev Al-Tas. Yeah, it's a mitzvah in HaTorah, but it's just a passive omitting of the mitzvah of Avelus, so Chazal have the right. So there, it doesn't sound like they're protecting any Yisr. It's not like there's a concern that you're going to violate some Yisr in the Torah if you have the Avelus first, or it's not even a concern, it looks like you're going to leave out a mitzvah Zaseh. It seems like the concern there has to do with other considerations. That the Gemara talks about losing money, that's really for the wedding. They're going to push off the wedding until after Avelus, and that's a financial concern because everything is already irrevocably invested in the wedding happening that day. So it's not clear what exactly is the motivation for it. It doesn't sound like it's a violation of the Losa, say there. So there is some debate as to what justifies Chazal making this gezeira. But there is a broader question that comes up, which is what Rabbeinu Yonah is really addressing here. Okay, so we know, for example, Chazal can tell us don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it falls out on Shabbos. But what does that mean in terms of the mitzvah of shofar? This is a theoretical question which is discussed at length by Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman in his Sefer Kovetz Ha'aretz to Maseches Yevamos has a very profound and beautiful discussion, beautiful from a lamdish perspective, explaining this whole sugya, discussing how exactly different questions within this sugya interact with each other. And he has three questions which he points out are interlocking issues. And one of the questions he asks is, so what happens? Chazal say, don't blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah. And the Gemara uses the phrase, lakor davar min haTorah, to uproot something from the Torah. So that sounds very strong. Is that what happened? Did the rabbis essentially uproot something from the Torah, take a mitzvah and rip it out of the Chumash? According to the Torah, you can blow shofar, you have to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, whatever day of the week it is, Shabbos included. And the rabbis took out an eraser and took that out of the Chumash. Is that what's going on? Bakar davar min haTorah, it sounds like that, to uproot something from the Torah. Or should we say, it's very hard to believe that. You know, we believe the Torah doesn't change, so the rabbis can't uproot something from the Torah. What it must mean is something much more limited. It must mean that they have the authority to tell you to disregard the mitzvah, tell you to not fulfill the directive of the Chumash to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah that year, first day of Rosh Hashanah. But the mitzvah is still there. They can't rewrite the Torah. They can't take it out. So they're telling you to ignore the mitzvah of the Torah. And the expression, Makor davar min haTorah, is harsh as it sounds, is not really literal. So that seems to be a open issue. That seems to be something that is debated. Rabbi Kiva Eger in his Drish
L'Chiddush. But then they still blow in certain places.
Yeah, so but that is, you could say, so the Gemara says that in Beit HaMikdash they would blow. So in the Hanami, so
the,
right, so there's a whole discussion with the Beis Din. But that topic aside, so whatever they did, whatever was part of the Gzera that they should continue doing it, they should continue doing it. But let's say in a situation in Tinak where it's known that the Gezeira unambiguously applies, so what's the status? So the Kibbeger raises this question, what would happen if somebody would blow shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah? So okay, he did the wrong thing. But maybe he fulfills a mitzvah and a Torah. This was a big discussion. There is a sefer called Kavdi Bekashyesa, which didn't start out as a sefer, started out as 2 pages long. And the end of the sefer Chelkes Yov, the Chelkes Yov was a posek, was the Talmud of the Avnei Nezer, not so long ago, in the past century. And in the back of his sefer, so if he has 2 or 3 pages, he says 103 questions that he says are the biggest questions in the world. He can't sleep at night trying to think about these questions. So Kava in Gematria is 103, Kuf Beis Aleph. This is 103 questions which drive me crazy. So one of them he says, this is from Akiva Eger. He says, it can't be. Well, Akiva Eger says that the rabbis uprooted the mitzvah of the Torah, but it still works. If they told you not to do it, it must be that they also said that essentially the mitzvah doesn't work. So again, this case is a little bit more intuitive, perhaps, in the Kriya Shema case, again, because the mitzvah is fighting with itself. So Rabbeinu Yonah is going to be really unprecedented any way you look at it. But there's many, many chidushim in what he's saying. But even if we accept that there would be a gzeira for some reason in this case, and Chazal would have a motivation to do this, which is itself a topic of debate, do they ever do that? Do they ever say there are other gezeiros when they're competing a mitzvah saseh with a concern of a lo saseh? Do they strip the mitzvah of its power? Do they say that there is no mitzvah of shofar when you blow it on Shabbos? So, for example, some later posts were discussion about this in the Sefer Tshuvas Evin Pima. Let's say you take a lulav on the first day of Sukkot when it falls out on Shabbos against the gezeira of Chazal. And then the next day, everyone else is doing it for the first time, so you're doing it for the second time. Do you make a shachiyonim? Is that your first time fulfilling the mitzvah of lulav that year? Or do we say, no, you fulfilled it yesterday. Everyone else is making a shachiyonim because it's the first time, but you fulfilled it yesterday. You weren't supposed to do it, but nice you did it, so the mitzvah counts. So this is a big debate. And some correlate this to a similar issue, that sometimes we have a mitzvah saseh where the rabbis came and they added on to it. Not necessarily a function of prohibiting something, but they added on to it more. To give two prominent examples, so we have a mitzvah min HaTorah of Kiddush, and we have a mitzvah min HaTorah of Birchas HaMazon. Both of those are considered to be biblical mitzvahs. Zachar is from a Shabbos Lekaucho, the Yafalta V'Savato thereafter. But in both cases, the rabbis expanded them. When it comes to Kiddush, there's a whole debate. We make Kiddush Friday night on wine. And there's a whole discussion. Is wine an obligation in HaTorah? Many of the Rishonim thought, nah. Kiddush Makum Suda, the obligation that if you're done in the place where you're eating, is that an obligation in HaTorah? Some of the Rishonim, maybe most of the Rishonim thought, nah. So here you have a mitzvah in HaTorah to make Kiddush. And the rabbis added on more details. Berachos HaMazon is made up of four brachos. Not all of those four were part of the mitzvah in HaTorah. The rabbis expanded it. So let's say nowadays somebody would make Kiddush Friday night without wine, not Makom Suda. Somebody would bench just the first three brachos. So he's not fulfilling the mitzvah derabbanan, the way the rabbi said to fulfill Kiddush or bench. But does he fulfill at least a mitzvah deraisa? Do we say, okay, at least he did what the Torah says? He didn't do it right as far as rabbis are concerned, but at least he did what the Torah says. So that was the debate. It has practical implications also, because, for example, we talk about Kiddush. So the whole discussion nowadays, should shuls make Kiddush in shul Friday night? In the time of the Gemara they did, because there were people who ate in the shul. So it's Kiddush Makom Suda. But nowadays, if nobody's eating in the shul, so are we accomplishing anything by making Kiddush in shul? The whole discussion in the later svar. Maybe you might say, well, maybe somebody's going to come to shul who's not going to make Kiddush at home. So at least they'll fulfill the mitzvah min HaTorah of Kiddush by hearing it. But some might argue, no, he's not going to fulfill anything, because if it's not Makom Suda, so maybe the rabbis redefined it so that there is no fulfillment even on a level min HaTorah. So there's a whole discussion. And the truth is, we could possibly distinguish between different cases, but there's a svara in both ways. Because there was a whole debate, it's a little bit later, who knows how far we'll get this summer, but later on in the first parak, and the Gemara in the beginning of Sukkah and the end of the first parak of Brachos, there is a discussion about the mitzvah of Sukkah. The Gemara says that let's say a person wants to sit Rosh HaVerubo B'Soch HaBayis, on Sukkah he wants to sit where his head and his body are basically in his house. But he's sitting in the sukkah, and his dinner table is in the house. So he is sitting in the sukkah. It happens to be that the food he's eating is in the house. So technically speaking, Min HaTorah, he's eating in the sukkah. But the rabbis know that a man tends to follow his dinner plate, and that if the dinner plate is in the house, he's going to end up pretty soon in the house. So they shouldn't do that. That's what the Gemara says, is the Gezeri shouldn't do that. Even though Min HaTorah that would work, shouldn't do that. And then the Gemara tells the story that the students of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai once came to visit someone on Sukkot, and they saw somebody doing this in violation of the Gezeira. They saw somebody sitting like this, and they said to him, "In Kena, you so know, if this is the way you've always been doing things, lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyamecha. You have never fulfilled the mitzvah of Sukkah." What do you mean he's never fulfilled the mitzvah of Sukkah? He's doing what the Torah says. okay, he's not fulfilling the rabbinical detail, but he's doing what the Torah says. So the machlokas among the Rishonim, Tosus over there in Sukkah and Dav Gimel, Tosus says it means exactly what it sounds like. Look, kiyamta mitzvah Sukkah, the rabbis knocked it out. If you didn't do it the way they say to do it, there's no mitzvah Sukkah anymore. And the Ran disagrees. The Ran's on a more famous Mishnah. We all know the Mishnah from the Haggadah. We say Pesach night, that Rabbi Gamliel Omer kol shomer shlosh dvarim elu lo yotzi dei chavasa. That you have to, you're not yotze on Pesach night unless you say Pesach matzah omar. So the Ran discusses when you're not yotze. It doesn't say in the Torah you're obligated to do this, so you should say your fulfillment of the mitzvah in the Torah. Now yotze may be a requirement derabbanan. So the Ran says that that's really how you should say it. That yeah, well, that's perfectly. You didn't fulfill everything exactly the way Chazal told you to do it, but the mitzvah in HaTorah that you did, because you still did Haggadah, you still are in fulfillment of the mitzvah in HaTorah. So there is a debate apparently between the Ran and Tosus about what this means. Does it really mean you can take away a mitzvah in HaTorah or not? And some suggest a split. Some suggest that it depends, and I think you could almost equally say the split either way. So it depends what you think makes more sense to you. But some say that when Chazal added on to a mitzvah, kiddush, benching, etc., so then, okay, you can fulfill the mitzvah in HaTorah, and you're still yotze. But the rabbis asked you to do it more, and that's what you need to fulfill the mitzvah, midrabban. But if they made a gzeira, if they said, don't blow shofar on Shabbos because of a concern of carrying, or don't do whatever because of a concern of some type of an avera, so then they not only defined the mitzvah differently, they forbade you from doing it. This was what the Kavod HaShesa was objecting to Rabbi Akiva Eiger. He said, how could you say you yotzei the shofar when the rabbi told you you're not allowed to do it? What would be the point in prohibiting it and then allowing you to still fulfill it afterwards? It must be that it's not there anymore. Well, when it comes to a positive mitzvah that they added on to, okay, so then there isn't really a need to prohibit it, so to speak, to take it away from its mitzvah status. Well, it could have seen a logic to say the opposite. You could have said, when it comes to a gezeirah that they said you're not allowed to perform the mitzvah, so you're dealing with two separate arenas there. Okay, so in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, you're told you're not allowed to blow shofar, and that's the overriding concern. But in terms of Hilchos Shofar, the mitzvah of shofar is still there. While when it comes to kiddush or benching, if the rabbis redefine the mitzvah, then presumably they're saying that now this is what you need to do in order to fulfill the mitzvah. So from a logical, sfar perspective, I could have seen the split either way. But there are those who suggest that it's two different types of scenarios. So it seems that a few more points we can make about this, maybe we may carry over a little bit into tomorrow morning, but there is a possible relationship here between this and another major area where the Achronim debate. And it's interesting, it does seem to closely correlate, even though you don't find this pointed out so much. The question is not really just, did the rabbis have a motivation to take the mitzvah away? Is there a reason for it, so to speak? But it's also a question of rabbinic authority. To what extent do they have the power? Can they do that? Can they take away a mitzvah status? Maybe they have authority over Jews to say this is what you can do and not do, but if the mitzvah is there, the mitzvah is there. So this really is seems to correlate very closely to a broader machlokes among the Achronim, that there is a position a lot of Achronim maintain. It's associated with the Nesivos HaMishpat primarily, and many later Achronim signed on to it also. The Nesivos was really, he didn't really say it, he said part of it, and this way it was understood by later Svarim. So this whole group of Achronim maintain that there is a fundamental difference between a mitzvah d'oraisa and a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Let's say an isser d'oraisa and an isser d'rabbanan. That if somebody eats chazer, that's an isser d'oraisa. Somebody eats a chicken cheeseburger, chicken and milk, so that's an isser d'rabbanan. The Torah doesn't prohibit chicken and milk. So a lot of Achronim assume that there is a fundamental difference. That an isser d'oraisa is what we call an isser chatzah. The item is inherently bad. the Torah, God wrote the world, God wrote the Torah and God created the world, so God said go and eat chaza, and there is inherent spiritual problem in chaza. And a person eats chaza, even inadvertently, even b'shogeg, this is a kapara, there's something that needs to be fixed, so to speak, because it's not just the avera, it's that there's some kind of spiritual contaminant. But if somebody eats the chicken cheeseburger, so then what it sounds like the Nesivus is saying is that that's not a Nesir Chatzah. There's nothing inherently bad about the chicken cheeseburger. It was neutral before the rabbis came along, so it's neutral now also. It's just there's an instruction on the individual we call an Nesir Gavra, that the Jewish person is told he can't eat this chicken cheeseburger. But there's nothing inherently bad about it. And if he would do it the shogeg inadvertently, so then maybe there's no need even for a kapara because he didn't ingest anything problematic. He just rebelled against the rabbis if he does it on purpose. But if he does it for shogeg, then there's no rebellion. So a lot of Achronim understood like that. A lot of Achronim thought that was the case. That the rabbis have no authority over the Torah, have no authority over the world. They have authority over Jewish people. So they can tell Jews, don't eat this food. They can't change its nature. While others thought, no, maybe they could. As Svengel thought, as Svengel wrote a little more recently, but he wrote in his Sefer Asin Daraisa that yes, that when the rabbis make a gezeira, he has proofs for this, Kadosh Baruch Hu signs off on it. God basically acknowledges it and changes the world accordingly. So now the Isser Drabanan is also an Isser Chesa, also has an inherent status where it's also prohibited. So it would seem like that would correlate strongly here also. When the rabbis say, don't blow shofar on Shabbos, so what's the effect of that? Do we say they have authority that goes beyond the individual, they have authority to the mitzvah of the Torah itself, and they can take away that mitzvah? Or should we say, no, they don't have that kind of authority, they have authority over Jewish people. They can tell you, even though the Torah says, blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, whatever day it is, we're telling you, don't do it. Ignore it. The mitzvah we can't change. The mitzvah is going to be there one way or another. But we can tell you not to observe the mitzvah. So it sounds like there's a strong correlation between these positions. Do you believe that rabbinic authority is limited only to Jewish people? Or do you believe that it has a broader effect and a Kadosh Baruch Hu signs off on it, and therefore that could redefine the mitzvah, and it could give objects a different status. It can create Nisr Chetzah where there wasn't one before. So that would seem to very closely correlate this whole discussion. Do we believe the Chazal even have the power, so to speak, to take away the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema? There's a lot more to say about this, so I may mention one or two other points tomorrow, and then we'll try to go further in the Gemara to this tomorrow a little bit, maybe inside, and then get to Beis and the Beis, hopefully immediately after that, which will allow us to have a context to discuss Rabbeinu Tam and the Gaonim in terms of Shkia and the like. Okay, you should have a wonderful day. Wonderful things. Yeah.